Tonight, James eats Nimbus, Mike eats Roadkill, and we throw away the lawnmower in exchange for a salad bowl.
This is James from TravelPunk.com.
This is Couch Potato Motherfucking Mike getting caught off guard by the recording equipment again.
It is a ages-old tradition of ours to catch Couch Potato Mike off.
Yep, just look down and there I am talking about a fucking air conditioner on the podcast.
Yeah, which is not even remotely the most embarrassing thing I've caught you talking about on the podcast before.
No, it's not. But speaking of the air conditioner, we apologize if the sound of it irritates the shit out of you. It'll probably come out in the levelizer, but it's summer, it is Tennessee, it's hot as balls, and we're not turning it off. So fuck it.
We're not turning it off.
No!
No, we're not turning it off. It's too damn hot in this bitch.
Yep.
Alright, so today...
Today?
We're going to talk about some wild edibles. We'll get to that in a second.
Not just any wild edibles. Our wild edibles.
Yeah, because I... So, yes, I know that if you wander the wilds of Arizona, you can find prickly pear, and that is a wild edible, not a source for water, my friends, because its high oxalic acid content will dehydrate you faster. But what's the point of knowing that? I have never been to, well, I've kind of been to Arizona, but I've never really been to Arizona, i.e. my flight to San Diego had a layover in Arizona for an hour.
By the time I get to Phoenix, you'll be rising.
Yeah, but I didn't even step on Arizona ground, so...
The fuck?
It doesn't matter.
Wait, you didn't get off the plane?
No, we just stayed on the plane for a while, and then it took off again.
You landed there, they probably had to refuel.
Yeah, refuel. I think some people got off, some people got on, and then we took...
Bus stop.
Yeah, it was like a flight bus stop, whatever. So, there's that. I've never been to Arizona, so I always preach that you learn the wild edibles in your area.
I've driven through Arizona, just like the tip of it.
They're like just the tip?
Just the tip, just like the tip. Corner. But I, too, never actually got out of the car in Arizona. So
doesn't count. So, yeah, learn the wild edibles in your area. And I like a nice round number of 10. Plus, it works well for podcasts. I always try to plan out 10 things to talk about because that gives us about an hour of jibber-jabber.
Yes, I mean, we always preach that you should learn the wild edibles of your area, and this episode is going to help us learn them.
Yeah, it's going to help us learn them. A lot of these are not just, they're not only Tennessee ones. if you're in or around the South, you'll have a lot of these. Yep. A lot of these are just United States in general. But, because there's not a whole lot that only grows exactly in Tennessee that doesn't grow anywhere else. It's America has a lot of the same plants.
Hey, edibles, are you from Tennessee? Because you're the only tin I see.
Oh! Yeah. Yeah, so that's what we're talking about today. Yep. Mike, how's your week been?
Don't ask. It's been a fucked up week.
Yeah. I've been on vacation.
I've had a pain in my neck the whole fucking week, too. I've got it right now.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell it is. I'm not feeling any kind of paralysis, so I seriously think I've got a broken, anything back there.
That's good.
Yeah, no vertebrae out of alignment, but I've had, a crick in my neck since last fucking Sunday, and it's now this fucking Sunday.
Ugh.
And it won't go the fuck away. I ain't getting old.
I've been on vacation now for, a whole week, I still have days left.
No, you've been on vacation longer than a week now. This is day 8 for you. Wait. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
It's day 8.
No, it's day 9.
Is it? Yeah. Saturday to Sunday?
Yeah, last Saturday to this Sunday, because Saturday, you've got two Saturdays in there, so there's already 8 days.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's nice.
Welcome to MathWorks.
Except for I've been broke almost the entirety of it.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks being broke on your vacay.
Yeah.
That's great to be broke on your vacay.
Yeah. It's
you can't get away way when you're broke on your.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
That's cray cray.
But it's nice to be off.
Yeah. It's nice to not have to fucking go.
Yeah, and there's a lot of
nose on the grindstone.
Free things to do.
Fuck yeah.
Turn around, look behind you, Mike. I built that shelf that I've got glasses and bowls on in my kitchen. The hidden shelf.
Yeah, that looks amazing.
You didn't look.
Of course I didn't look. I just said I had a crick in my fucking neck. I'll look after we record.
Yeah. yeah. So yeah, there's still some more building stuff I want to do. I was going to do something. Was it yesterday or the day before? Day before, yeah, Friday. It monsooned here, and I was like, well, we're just going to watch TV all day.
Straight up fucking did. Crazy weather in Tennessee. Yeah.
So
I would not want to be stranded out in the wilds of Tennessee. The weather is just too goddamn unpredictable. On the upside, though, you find plenty of fresh water falling from the fucking sky.
Right, right.
So, and ice.
If people have questions, comments, concerns, or show ideas, where can they leave us a voicemail at?
James@survivalpunk.com. If your voicemail's in the form of an email.
Right.
Otherwise, you call the number 615-657-9109. That is 615-657-9109. Once again,
49104.
Okay, scratch those first two. It is 615-657-9104. Once again, 615-657-9104. Or if you'd like it backwards, it is 901-975-6516. For those dyslexic friends of mine.
Yay, Lysdexia.
615-657-9104.
Right. So, you can always get in contact with us that way. I will be ordering new stickers when I have money. And if you leave us a review on iTunes and send me an email, james@survivalpunk.com.
And a check.
Just tell me who you are and so I can verify it. I will,
Or a money order.
I will send you a money order.
Or gold.
I don't think it's going to last a whole lot longer. Maybe I'll extend it. I made a discount code for the Survival Punk Army for July 4th.
Just one brick of gold.
But then I didn't publish a podcast. I'm like, well, I'm not going to tell people about a discount code since I didn't put out a podcast this week. But the discount code is there. It's freedom, all lowercase letters. Gives
freedom.
You $20 a year. $20 a year. So a little half off. It'll be going till the 14th of July.
I don't want to take the little half off. I want to take the big half off.
Yeah, well, I say $20 is more than half off.
Yeah, buddy.
Hell yeah, yeah, it's a good deal. So if you've been on the hedge about getting a membership, go ahead and do that. And if $20 is more than you got in your pocket, there's always a $5 a month thing, and I actually love the $5 a month people. It's a monthly reoccurring, like, cha-ching in my pocket that helps me get the show out.
And who notices $5 a month missing?
Yes, but who
not
notices
even your wife if you go
$5 a month gaining?
She
this
might.
Guy. So, yep. I almost wish I had tons and tons of just $5 a month people instead of a same number of like yearly people. Just to be honest.
Yeah.
I like that reoccurring revenue.
Fuck yeah.
But, you know, if like 1,000 of you guys were like, I want to join the yearly membership today,
I wouldn't tell you no. We would not stop you for $20,000.
Yeah. I could actually give Mike a salary to make sure he gets on the podcast.
Yeah. I'd actually show up for more episodes.
Yeah. Then. Yeah. So,
if you want more Mike, send us money.
Exactly. Because I would say I do this for free. I do make some money, but I spend a lot of money. So
it
bounces out, though.
We're starting to sound like the PBS telethon.
Oh, we were watching the red nose American Ninja Warrior from last year that had the arrow guy on it, Stephen Amnell.
Okay.
Who, by the way, did the course without tagging in his professional partner and then was like, so we get $5,000 for each, like, obstacle we complete, like, after he made it the warp wall and hit the button. And they're like, yeah. He's like, then I'm going to go to the back course and do some more. So we went to the back, and the first thing on the back one was the salmon ladder, which he's known for in Arrow for doing the salmon ladder.
Oh my God.
He did that, made another $5,000 for the charity, and then went to the next event, which had never been seen before, so no one had done it. And he was just swinging on it and was like, talked to the audience. He's like, you guys have been awesome. It's been great being out here. Ah! And then he planted it into the water.
Damn.
So, I think only two people did every single thing on the course. Him and an Olympian athlete who's been called the greatest athlete in the world. So he competed.
Athlete in the world.
In the world, yes. So, good times. On to wild edibles. What do we have up? Numero uno roll.
Something you can eat that grows in the wild, I would imagine.
Yes, grab a...
Known as... I don't know. I can't see this.
Sumac.
It was the one that wasn't marked.
No, sumac is marked. It's a number one.
Oh, yeah. Here it is. Yeah. Number one. Sumac.
So I thought about this episode because I was driving. No, we were at the ice cream place last weekend, my family and I. And I looked over and saw some sumac growing. So I ran over and grabbed it and made my stepson, Skylar, try some. And I'm like, this is a wild. If you can make like a pink lemonade with it. It's pretty delicious. I've made it before. So tell us about sumac.
Well, a friend's father taught me the name of the sumac tree when I was 7 years old.
Skip over that jibba-jabba and tell us, like, the important stuff.
Description. The most common sumac in my region is the staghorn sumac, Rus typhina, typhina.
Oh, hold on. We've jumped ahead of ourselves because we went down so many rabbit holes. First of all...
This episode is about wild edibles.
So there's a... So the wild edible test... We'll talk about that real quick before we get into sumac.
Yeah, so if you're wandering around in the woods and you're like, hey, that light looked good to eat.
There's six steps you can do to tell if it's edible. And so we're going to tell you 10 wild edibles that are known to be okay for people in most circumstances. You may have a specific allergy to it, i.e. me and Mike go into the woods and eat lavender. His wife could not.
She would die.
So these may be universal wild edibles, but you specifically may not be able to eat some of these edibles. So please, we are not medical professionals. We can't tell you what to do. But use the universal edibility test before you just dive head in.
Right.
Unless you're me and you're stupid.
Yeah, these are just good rules of the wrist.
Care to take number one?
Yes. First thing you need to do if you find something, you want to separate the plant into its various parts. You pull apart its roots, its stems, its leaves, its buds, and its flowers. Focus on only one piece of the plant at a time. You don't want to get everything all jumbled up and like, oh, right. I'm going to try this, then I'm going to try this. Because you do this in quick succession, guess what? You're not going to know which parts are fucking edible and which parts are right. just, have just killed you.
If you know for a fact, if you think you know what the plant is, so like if you go out there and you find sumac that we're talking about in just a second, obviously you know you're not going to eat the leaves, the stem, or the root. You want the sumac berries. So start with that. There's no point in wasting your time on things that you're not going to eat. But if you do not have any clue what it is, follow these steps all the way.
See, it's not separating out and doing the proper pre-planning. Which is why potatoes were illegal in England for a very long time.
Oh, my God. Number two, smell it.
Smell it.
A strong, unpleasant odor is a bad sign. There's not a lot. So
do not eat.
This is a universal rule. If you came across, let's say, pawpaw, which is a delicious edible, or if you're in Asia and you came across the durian fruit, it would fail number two. But you can still eat both of them. But this is a general rule. A lot of stinky plants don't want to be eaten.
No.
And you should not eat them.
Apparently durian fruit is a delicious plant, but it also does not want to be eaten.
It is so stinky, it's illegal to open a durian fruit in Singapore.
Yeah. It's fucked in a public place.
In a public place. Yeah, in Singapore city limits. Like,
well, it's fucked up. You see... Because a durian fruit, it's a spiky-looking fucking fruit. I mean, it has a very spiky...
It looks like it doesn't want to be eaten.
Then when you open it up, it smells like hell. How the fuck people have even figured out you could eat this shit is beyond me.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Everything about it screams, please do not eat me.
Yeah.
Number three, test for contact poisoning by placing a piece of the plant on your inner elbow or wrist for a few minutes. If your skin burns... itches, feels numb, or breaks out in a rash, don't eat the fucking thing.
Yeah. Self-explanatory. Yeah. You know, there's, I'm pretty sure I have a mango issue, and I would pass this test, I think. But the next one, number four, the Marie right now, I think I would fail because I have issues with it. If the plant passes the skin test, prepare a small portion the way you want to eat it. Boiling is always the best bet. Yeah. So it's still not that one, but
you can boil most things.
You can, yeah, there's some that we're going to talk about today that are edible only after boiling them.
Yeah, it's funny. Certain, wild bananas, like if they're not quite ripe yet, you can boil them and that'll take them right up to the edible state. Found that out on an episode of Man, Woman, Wild.
That works. Also, putting them in the oven at like the warming temperature for an hour will finish the ripening process.
Well, interestingly enough, the way they boiled them, I mean, they were out in somewhere in South America. They found a fucking natural bubbling hot spring, and they just threw the fucking bananas in there.
That doesn't require any calories to do.
No, not at all. They just had this gigantic bunch of bananas that was still green, so they put it in the hot spring for a while, and then they fucking filled their bellies.
Hell yeah.
Number five, taking a bite. Before taking a bite, touch the plant to your lips to test for burning or itching. If there is no reaction after 15 minutes, take a small bite, chew it, and hold it in your mouth for another 15 minutes. If the plant tastes very bitter or soapy, spit it out. Now, that's something that's hard for some people to do, is hold anything in their mouth for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's worth it if it's the difference between feeding your starvation or killing yourself.
Yeah. For me, mango would burn my mouth, so it tastes like horrible pepper to me.
Hey, that's just true. I mean, one man's poison is another man's right. delicacies.
And the soapy thing, there's people that have a genetic mutation that makes cilantro taste like soap to them. My mother, for one, has that. Yeah, my mom can't stand the taste of cilantro.
I mean, it's often described as having that soapy flavor to it.
Yeah, which I think cilantro is delicious. Even though I carry the gene, it's not activated in me. Number six, if there's no reaction in your mouth, swallow a bite, wait several hours. If there's still no ill effect, you can assume this part of the plant is edible. Repeat the test for other parts of the plant. Some plants have both edible and inedible parts. Yeah, see, so that's the test.
This is a very time-consuming test.
Yes.
But it's totally worth it. I mean, yeah, think about it. If a part of a plant passes that test, you know you can eat all of that you want and not fucking die.
Yeah. There was a, God rest his soul, there was a great survivalist in the survival community, very respected, very looked upon, Ron Hood. I have one of his videos where he was doing a camping trip, a solo camping trip, solo survival camping trip. He collected a bunch of morel mushrooms. He got sloppy. He got sloppy, and not all of the morels he picked were morels. He picked some false morels, and he shit himself almost to death. Like, he fucked up bad. So, don't get sloppy with it.
Yeah, you gotta learn the subtle differences.
Yeah, this is like the pinnacle of survival knowledge here. If Ron Hood could fuck up and get sick, all of us can, guys.
Oh, yeah.
So, let's jump to sumac now that we know how to test.
Alrighty. On into the wonderful world of sumac.
Yeah. Delicious.
Allegedly.
I'm going to collect some.
The most common sumac in my region is the staghorn sumac, which grows throughout the northeastern United States and southeastern Canada, which has nothing to do with us whatsoever. Yep. Maybe we should have read this first. See, staghorn sumac is a small tree or large shrub, usually 8 to 20 feet tall, although I've seen a few as tall as 35 feet.
This motherfucker's a rambler.
The twigs are sparse and very thick, and those of the current year's growth are covered with velvety hairs, like a stag's horns in velvet. The leaves are large, sometimes more than 2 feet long, and pinnately compound, with a leaflet lanceolate, and serrate. The foliage closely resembles that of Elianthus and black walnut. Sumac bark is smooth and dark gray. The inner bark is light green. When damaged, these trees exude latex. This and other species of true sumac usually grow in clones. Sumac colonies in the open have the classic appearance of clones, tallest in the center, getting gradually shorter toward the outside, creating the illusion of a gentle hill where there is none. If such sumac in such a sumac clone, the trees often have the habit of bearing leaves only at the canopy. So when
Skip through, that's too much reading. Go to the last page of sumac.
Poison sumac.
We're not looking about poison sumac.
Range and habitat. It's only talking about the kind that works not in Tennessee, dude. Literally, it's just staying on staghorn sumac.
But the pictures show the sumac that we have all around us. So sumac, you can notice if it's a ripe sumac, it has this sort of like little clump of berries that are like, they're like little, they're almost in the shape of like a Christmas tree, like that Christmas tree triangle shape. There's a clump of like tightly packed red berries like that.
Let me see. It's most common on roadsides, along railroad tracks and fence rows, and in old fields and other habitats throughout the northeastern United States and adjacent Canada. Fuck you. It appears sporadically in hardwood forests. There are numerous other species of sumac in North America, and at least one found in almost every inhabited part of the continent. Prairie sumac occurs in Texas and parts of Oklahoma and New Mexico. Murren sumac grows in southern Arizona and New Mexico. Lemonade berry grows in Southern California. Shining sumac is found over the southern half of the eastern North America.
I'm going to assume that's us then.
Yeah, smooth sumac is found throughout the eastern United States and scattered Rocky Mountains and Great Plains.
Which might also be us.
Yeah.
Since
sumac is related to cashews and mangoes, anyone allergic to those should avoid it or proceed with caution. The various species of red-berried sumacs have been widely used to brew a tart, refreshing drink.
Exactly.
This beverage has been called sumac-aid, ruse-aid, sumac lemonade, Indian lemonade, and sumac tea.
It makes a pink lemonade because of the red color of the berries. When you soak them in water for several hours, you get the flavor out. It makes a pink color, and it's very tart like lemons.
Says the first step is to harvest the berries. Sumac berries are really just seeds covered with a thin coating of an acidic substance and sometimes hairs. They are easy to collect since the clusters are rather large. You can snap off the twig that bears the clusters by bending it quickly, although it's easier to use pruning shears or a knife. You want to get the berries when they're dark and red, fully mature, so they have that fully developed, their tart flavor, but before the rain has had the opportunity to wash the flavor out.
Yeah, that was a very long-winded article.
It ain't even done yet, dude.
We're done
for another like 5 pages.
Number 2.
You got it.
Blackberry. Tennessee.
Blackberry.
Tennessee is very well known for blackberries.
Yeah.
Me and Skylar did some blackberry picking at my mom's house on July 4th.
Don't tell his grandmother.
Yeah, I know. They're delicious. It's about to be blackberry season here in Tennessee, so we're gonna do some blackberry picking like next level. Like real legit, like buckets and buckets. These are sort of half like, ripe. So not really great, but blackberry, also known as raspberry and dewberry, Rubeus species. Description. These plants have prickly stems, canes that grow upward, arching back toward the ground. They have alternate, usually compound leaves. Their fruits may be red, black, yellow, or orange. I'd love to see some orange berries. Habitat and distribution. These plants grow in the open, sunny areas at the margin of the woods, lakes, streams, and roads throughout temperate regions. There is also Arctic raspberry. For you people that live in the cold places. Edible parts. The fruits and peeled young shoots are edible. Flavor varies greatly. Other uses. Use the leaves to make a tea to treat diarrhea. I'll be damned. Drink a tea made by brewing the dried root bark of the blackberry bush. They're delicious. And that's all this book has to say on it. Awesome. So, yeah.
Has less of a personal touch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very straight to the point. This is the illustrated guide to edible plants department of the army.
Yeah, thank God. That one thing I read, that's literally
the Forager's Harvest.
That's the only thing we're getting from that book, too.
Yeah, it's a great book to have and to read.
But I wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah. but I wouldn't want to read it on a podcast. We did. I stopped you because
it wasn't horrible.
It was going to madness.
No. I was turning into one of those voiceovers from the old Disney wilderness documentaries.
Oh my God.
You know, about that lonely cougar.
Yeah. I've seen some of those.
Who's going to be his friend?
So yeah. And so another thing is you have to know what wild edibles you have at what time, i.e. right now it's about to be blackberry season.
And it's 10:45 a.m.
It's 10:45 a.m. There are the end of May, beginning of June, strawberry season ended, so you're not going to find wild strawberries.
I knew you were going to bring up fucking strawberry season. You were so disappointed yesterday. Yep. They had planned to go to one of those places where you pick your own strawberries, but the season's like over. The strawberries are gone, and Serenity is depressed.
Yeah. That's chickweed.
She punched him in the face with a car yesterday. It was fucking horrible to watch.
Let's see. Oh, that next up is Curly Doc.
I've seen those motherfucking things before.
Yeah.
I've seen them growing all over the fucking place. Those are edible?
They're edible.
That's fucked.
You're about to tell us how and why.
Curly Doc, Latin name, Rumex crispus, is an excellent wild plant.
Sounds like a cereal.
Yep. It provides food for at least 6 to 9 months and year-round in some climates. It's fairly easy to identify and grows abundantly throughout all of non-Arctic North America. Curly Doc has a mild flavor, subtly sour note, and a pleasant texture, making it a very versatile ingredient in the kitchen. Curly Doc comes from Eurasia. So it's an invasive species here in the Americas. Invasivore eating is one of the most locally sourced, extremely sustainable ways to look at food. Easy to ID, delicious, abundant, nutritious, and sustainable? I wonder why everyone isn't jumping on the Curly Doc bandwagon.
That's why.
Small warning, Curly Doc has an oxalic acid which should be avoided by people with rheumatoid arthritis and kidney or liver problems. More on that below.
Yeah. So I wouldn't go on like a Curly Doc binge eating spree. I.e. like you shouldn't eat like 5 pounds a day. Other than that, you know, if you make a salad once or twice a week with Curly Doc, the oxalic acid in it should be okay to you. Unless, like I said, you have some of these issues. There's some more people that are sensitive to oxalic acid. I believe my wife, Serenity, has an oxalic acid sensitivity. Some of the things sort of flare her up. But for those of us who do not have an oxalic acid sensitivity, enjoy.
All right, moving right along into number something.
Number B. Plantain. Yeah, we have plantain, I think, pulled up. Did you find plantain in a book?
No, it was in that. It's in the book you're holding.
Oh, yeah. Number B. Juniper berries. I made a beer with juniper berries.
Let's see.
You read that one. I'll read this one. Okay. Plantain, broadleaf and narrowleaf, Plantago species. I believe that's well as vagina.
And once again, to preface, we're not talking about the really tough bananas here.
No. This is the weed growing probably everywhere. Like yeah,
those don't grow in Tennessee.
No. Unfortunately, because I like plantain.
They are good.
Description. The broadleaf plantain has leaves over 2.5 centimeters across. They're pretty fat. You can't miss those. And I see more broadleaf around than I do the narrow leaf. They grow close to the ground. The flowers are on a spike that rises from the middle of the cluster of leaves. The narrow leaf plantain has leaves up to 12 centimeters long and 2.5 centimeters wide. So they're the same width. They're just long.
That means they would be round.
This is 2.0 centimeters wide. Those are 2.0 centimeters across. That's the same width. But these ones are like 12 centimeters long instead of the other ones that don't even say how long they are. They're centimeter wide. They're covered with hairs. The leaves form a rosette. The flowers are a small and inconspicuous. Yeah, you never really see the flowers. Habitat and distribution. Every fucking where. Look for these plants in lawns and alongside roads in the north temperature zone everywhere in the United States. This plant is common weed throughout much of the world. Edible parts. The young tender leaves are edible raw. Older leaves should be cooked, probably boiled once or twice, water removed. seeds are edible, raw, or toasted. They have seeds? I've never seen the seeds on these things.
Well, yeah, I don't know. They probably come out of the blossoms.
Yeah. Other uses, to relieve pain from wounds or sores, to wash and soak the entire plant for a short time and apply it to injured area, to treat diarrhea, drink a tea made from 28 grams, 1 ounce, of the plant leaves boiled in 0.5 liter of water. The seeds and seed husks act as a laxative. So part of it cures diarrhea and part of it gives you diarrhea.
The more you know.
The more you know. I think next episode is going to be on medicinal plants. That's why I left out some of the ones that I saw around here. One time when I was coming into my house, one of those jackass piece of shit red wasps stung me on the back of the neck. I murdered him for it. But I knew right away, so I went out to the yard, found some plantain, because it's all over the yard out here. And you either chew up one of the leaves, or you sort of like macerate it with your hands, spread it on there, I put a Band-Aid over it, and it was gone. Like, it just, the next morning I checked it, I could not tell I was stung by a wasp. Could not tell at all. So, and the pain went away fairly soon. I mean,
do you want to leave these in here? Or get them out of our way.
You can pull them out, the ones we've used.
Okay.
So up next, we've got...
Wood sorrel. Wood sorrel. Oxalis species.
Does that make me think it has oxalic acid in it?
Don't get ahead of us. Wood sorrel resembles shamrock or four-leaf clover with a bell-shaped pink, yellow, or white flower. Wood sorrel is found in temperate zones worldwide in lawns, open areas, and sunny woods. And you can cook the entire plant. But caution, eat only small amounts of this plant as it contains a fairly high concentration of oxalic acid that can be harmful.
Yeah. Oxalic acid, like we said, you know, we're not going to go over the warnings every single time. Just know that they're there. One of the wild edible things I came across, which I've not had wood sorrel, but I'm going to look for it, and try to find some. One of the wild foraging things I came across mentioned May apple. So I remember, I think it was a year or two ago, me and Mike saw all these like stupid, dumpy little like plants popping up out of nowhere, right? May.
They look like big leaves off of trees.
They look like big leaves.
Out and taking root.
Yeah. So, I was wondering what they were. I went, took a picture, posted it in a plant identification group on Facebook, which are wonderful, by the way, to help you find stuff. They're very knowledgeable people, and you will find your answer fairly quick instead of searching through books and stuff and trying to find the answer. Mayapple, when I further researched it, the seeds are poisonous. So poisonous that Native American tribes used it to commit suicide. So I'm a little hesitant to include anything that was used for ritual suicide. There are parts that they're edible, but the fruit on them is so delicious that squirrels and deer will eat it. You'll never see a mayapple fruit. So, don't worry about it. And it's poisonous.
They must know not how not to eat the seeds.
Yeah, or they're just not bothered by them. Chickweed is next. That was one we had up here, right?
Yeah, you had that up there somewhere.
There is
5 million tabs
open. Chickweed. Yeah. The name chickweed most notably describes common chickweed, Stellaria media. That's an awesome name.
That sounds like a Spanish TV channel.
Yeah. Stellaria media! Ay, 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 ay! Sabido gigante!
And we just lost all of our Latin listeners.
Yeah. Goddamn racist. Although, there are several other chickweeds, all in genus Stellaria. Stellaria. Common chickweed is a cool weather plant native to Europe and has wildly naturalized in the United States and throughout much of the world. It's often found in lawns and other areas of sun to partial shade in moist soil.
I am noticing a fucking pattern here of shit that can be found in your lawn.
Yes, and part of that was very deliberate on my side. I don't really like all grass lawns. I'd rather have a lawn that I can go out there that I can cure a wasp sting or make a salad from. And the lawn thing's going to continue that way. I actually want to find a mixture of these seeds for lawn to plant in our lawn because it's mostly mud, but there's also some like just horrible weeds that are not edible. And no grass. So, let's see. In temperate climates like our southern Appalachians, which is here, chickweed normally appears during the cooler temperatures of fall and dies back in the late spring and early summer heat. So not really something you eat right now, like we said, the time frame of your wild edibles, but it's typically considered to be an early spring plant. It thrives between 53 and 68. Not right now.
Now, you know, that's another thing. I mean, it's good to know different wild edibles that appear at different times of the year. If you're in a really lush area, you've got something to eat year-round out there growing.
Right. Or just knowing what you can eat when. Like, yeah, we can't get strawberries right now, but there's an abundance of blackberries. And, curiously enough, in the fall, it's elderberry season here in Tennessee, and elderberries are great for cough medicine. So right as you're going into cold season, you get that abundance of cold medicine.
It's amazing how nature will just sometimes provide like that.
And it's curious, too, like how people figure these things out. It's interesting. So
somebody had to try it.
I know. The stringy but succulent stems of chickweed can grow up to a foot and a half or so and produce tiny white flowers throughout the growing season. Its pointed oval-shaped leaves grow in pairs opposite each other, fairly far apart on the stem. Leaves can be anywhere between 1/4 to 1 1/4 inches long. Chickweed flowers are 1 1/8 inch to 1 1/4 diameter and consist of 5 double-lobed white petals supported by a whorl. What a great word! A whorl of five green sepals. The flowers somewhat resemble a carnation flower. Chickweed is actually a member of the carnation family, Carnophyllaceae.
There's no N in there.
Whatever. It has a few lookalikes.
He hates it when I correct
him. It has a few lookalikes, but distinguished factors are chickweed does not have a milky sap. Try pulling the stem apart. If there's no milky sap, you'll more likely have chickweed. If it has a line of hair along the stem, which alternates between the joints.
It does have a line of hair.
It has, yeah. If it does have that, then you have chickweed.
Yes, you do.
The inner stem of chickweed is elastic, so if you gently pull the stem apart, the outer sheath will separate while the inner part will stretch.
Like mozzarella.
Yeah. Chickweed is excellent raw, used in sprouts, eaten sandwiches, wraps, etc., and, of course, a great base for salad. Also great cooked and makes a good substitute for spinach. A lot of these things make good substitutes for spinach, which is sort of expensive at the grocery store, but these shit's growing for free. Give chickweed's purported nutritive value. It's actually strange to me to call it substitute for anything. It would be more appropriate to call spinach substitute for chickweed. Drop the mic, bitches. Traditional uses, blah, 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 blah. Chickweed has several traditional uses, both including internally and externally, anti-inflammatory and pain reliever, digestive and intestinal support, skin treatment, kidney support, astringent. A compress or tincture of fresh juice of chickweed is used to draw out splinters. Chickweed is a yard weed. So yeah, chickweed. And I guess I'll have links to a couple of these books for you to check out. None of which had chickweed, by the way, but I'll try to put a link to that in the show notes so you can find them. It's weird how maybe we missed it somehow. Maybe it's hidden in there, not listed in the back, but we couldn't find anything in any of these books.
Maybe it'd be listed under Indian lettuce.
I don't know. I don't know. But the next one up is Thistle.
Thistle.
You have that.
That would be number 7, I believe.
That army book is easily the most useful one we have.
Yeah, it's what I used to use back in when we did the Wild Edible of the Week segment back in the day. Thistle.
The wee.
What?
Wild Edible of the Week. The wee.
Have you lost your shit?
Wild Edible of the Week. The wee.
Why did we never call it back then?
I don't know.
Why did we ever? And now it's time for the wee.
If you would like to bring back the wee, let us know in the comments.
If for no other reason, just to have us go wee. Yeah, do that. Thistle. Sarcium species. Description. This plant may grow as high as 1.5 meters, or about 4.5 feet, to those of us that aren't British. Its leaves are long, pointed, deeply lobed, and prickly. Thistles grow worldwide in dry woods and fields. And their edible parts, you ask? Peel the stalks, cut them into short sections, and boil them before eating. The roots are edible raw or cooked, but caution, some thistle species are poisonous. Other uses? Twist those tough fibers of the stems to make strong twine.
Yeah, if you've ever looked on the side of the roads and stuff, you've probably seen a thistle variety. They're like long, stalky stalks with these big, round, puffy heads on them and like thistly parts hanging off of them. Like
I don't like that.
Caution.
Some thistle species are poisonous.
Yeah, make sure you identify which species you have.
It doesn't say in here.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Check.
But also, I mean, the twine thing, that's kind of brilliant because that's another survival thing, cordage.
Yes. So good one there. Pokeweed. There's pokeweed. Do we find that in a book?
Yeah, it's over here.
That army, if you can only buy one of these books, we suggest getting the army book. Pokeweed, I've known my entire life. I've not ever eaten it, but I have known of its existence since childhood. For a different reason. Pokeweed. Phyllotolachia americana. This plant may grow as high as 3 meters, 6 feet, us Americans. Its leaves are elliptical and up to 1 meter in length. This produces many large clusters of purple fruits, air quotes, purple fruits, in late spring. On a purple sort of stalk they grow off of. Habitat distribution. Look for the plant in the open, sunny areas of forest clearings and fields alongside roads in eastern North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. Along like wood lines. Like if you have property and you go look at the sort of tree line out there, you probably will see some pokeberry if you are in any of these areas. Edible parts. Listen carefully. The young leaves and stems are edible cooked. Boil them twice, discarding the water from the first boiling. The fruits are edible if cooked.
Now, this is a big caution area right here.
Yeah, if you could have seen the look on my face when I read the fruits are edible if cooked, all parts of the plant are poisonous if eaten raw. Never eat the underground portions of the plant as these contain the highest concentrations of the poisons. Do not eat any plant over 25 centimeters tall or when the red is showing on the plant. Don't eat the berries. Don't eat the berries. The berries are good to make sort of ink with. I used to like smash up the berries and like draw on stuff with them because they make a bright sort of purpley dark ink. Use the juice of the fresh berries as a dye. Yeah, exactly. It even says that. Other uses, use the berries as a dye. The berries make a great dye. But if you eat the berries, you'll die. Yeah. Da-dump chink. And yeah, pay attention to that. Don't eat any part of the plant over 25 centimeters tall. Yeah. You want to make sure you find these because they'll get really tall and crazy. Eat them when they're small.
Don't bite the dick.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, what is it? Here in the South, there's a lot of people who will fry plantain, make something delicious out of it. So.
Oh, yeah. Now let's see. Moving.
Next up is something less poisonous and more well known, possibly. Well known.
Yeah, everybody out here knows dandelion.
Yeah, which is so hated.
Officinale. Description. Dandelion leaves are jagged edged. Do I really need to give you the description, folks? You know what the fuck a dandelion is, but I'll do it anyway. They grow close to the ground and are seldom more than 20 centimeters long. Its flowers are bright yellow, and there are several dandelion species. Habitat and distribution. Dandelions grow in the open, sunny locations throughout the northern hemisphere, in spite of everything you do.
Yeah.
They're one of the prettiest weeds, though. Edible parts? All the parts are edible. Eat the leaves raw or cooked. Boil the roots as a vegetable. Roots roasted and ground are a good coffee substitute.
Minus the caffeine.
Dandelions are high in vitamins A and C, and in calcium, for God's sake. and use the white juice in the flower stems as glue.
Why didn't we just dig up dandelions instead of getting glue sticks yesterday?
That's a lot of work.
That is a lot of work.
Especially for what the fuck we were doing.
Yeah. But yeah, I've actually put dandelion petals in salads before, and it just adds a nice little flavor to it and color. Like, and you know, like, do you really want to eat, like, just a salad, just like an ugly monotone color, or like you want some nice colors in it?
And I've known a lot of people to make dandelion tea.
Or dandelion wine.
Mm-hmm.
So, delicious stuff there.
Yeah, I mean, the whole damn thing's edible. You see dandelions, don't fucking toss them, eat them.
Yeah, next up.
It's not in any of
the
books.
So, it's not in any of the books. And before we move on, I think it's funny that a lot of these plants that we've talked about, like Mike said, they are yard plants. They grow sort of randomly everywhere, sides of the roads, yards and shit. And they're hated. They are fucking hated. Like, I've heard commercials on, like, are dandelions your enemy? What?
Yeah,
I just told you it's a salad green and you're calling it your enemy?
Almost every weed killing commercial I've ever seen shows them spraying like a dandelion growing out of your sidewalk.
Yeah. I mean, if spinach and lettuce grew wild in your backyard, would you be angry at that too? Lettuce is your enemy. Kill the lettuce.
I mean, especially when a plant is so versatile as fucking dandelion.
Yeah. I mean, we just said everything is edible.
Yeah, you could eat the fucking flower, you can eat the leaves, you could eat the stem, you could fuck it.
Dry the roots and make a coffee-ish substitute, kinda.
Or, I mean, hell, it even said that you could fucking eat them like they're like a fucking weird potato.
Yeah, so
the whole damn plant is fucking edible.
Yeah, and you're on a war with it. So the next thing we're gonna talk about,
it just shows you how far fucking humans as a species have gone away from their fucking roots. When people back there would have seen, people back in the day would have seen dandelions and a blessing, and now everything's so goddamn convenient. Everything is fucking, if you can't get it from a store, it's not worth a fine fuck. Just kill it. Spray it with shit and throw it in the goddamn garbage.
So
that's been Mike's rant for the week.
Next up is maybe the most hated weed I've ever heard of.
Dun, dun, dun!
Kudzu. And there are parts of Tennessee, like you look on the side of the road, and you see like a hill just covered in kudzu.
Oh, God. Like, the path between our house, where our property and Dixon, you see kudzu covering every you'll see it covering the power lines, the fucking light poles, entire fucking hills. It just fucking keeps coming.
Yeah, and it's like people are on a war against trying to kill it, but it's edible. It has health benefits. Some of these health benefits include antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant,
thrombotic, cardiovascular, osteoporotic.
Yeah, kudzu as food. Kudzu has been a popular food in Japan and China for thousands of years. The edible parts of the kudzu plant, are the leaves, vine tips, flower blossoms, and roots.
So pretty much
the whole thing almost, yeah.
Except for like stems, I guess, but hell, yeah. The stems are vines.
It's high in fiber, tips. Protein, vitamins A and D. We don't get enough vitamin D as it is. However, the tuberous roots that offer this plant's real I was like, oh, this is a bad part. However, it's the tuberous roots that offer this plant's real premium. These roots are dehydrated and pulverized, and it's a starchy kudzu powder that is used for cooking in a myriad of ways, for thickening soups and sauces, to batter foods to deep fry them. Who doesn't like deep fried things?
I know, deep fried things are awesome.
Yeah, I know. In the early spring and throughout the growing season, harvest the very end of an established kudzu plant, where the new growth is forming small shoots and young leaves. Young leaves and vine tips are tender enough for most culinary purposes, including in salads. The older, larger leaves are good for, dolmades, stuffed leaves. Dolmades. I've had some dolmades. Usually they're grape leaves, but I've never had, some Kurdish people gave me some, grape leaf stuff with like, rice hamburger meat. It was pretty good, actually. Kudzu soup. Kudzu phyllo.
I don't know.
Filio? Kudzu dolmades. The possibilities are truly endless when it comes to being creative in the kitchen. Remember, if you can't beat it, you might as well eat it. I like this. I'm gonna include this in the show notes, actually.
Fuck yeah. Well, I mean, look at that. I mean, basically, if counting backwards is a top 10 list, we couldn't have ended them better.
Yeah.
Numbers 2 and 1, essentially, would be Dandelions and Kudzu. Both are considered, like, invasive on your property
the
fucking
devil.
Species. They fucking just kill them, destroy them, and all that shit. And they're so, I mean, like, every part of them is fucking edible, virtually.
Yeah, and parts of them have medicinal qualities. So,
how psychotic is that?
Exactly. Like you said in your rant, how disconnected are we from life?
I mean, we used to look at shit as food, and now we just look at it as a fucking nuisance.
Yeah, and I think part of that is the mentality of people where not in the store, they don't trust it.
I mean, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I said. I mean, think about it. We're talking about, they're always talking about in the world, about the world, I mean, you know, about world hunger. About our fucking food supply. Meanwhile, we're destroying all this edible shit constantly.
Yeah. What sense does that make?
None.
Not even counting, like, throwing away food, but the fact that, like, you look on the side of the road and there's a whole hill covered in kudzu.
It just, why? Because it requires some extra work? It requires some extra trust? Guess what? Your fucking ancestors had those fucking trusts. Americans, we come from fucking pioneers of all different fucking walks of fucking life.
I mean, I think
if you go back far enough, it was all that shit. We're a hunter-gatherer species that's now come to fucking depend on your goddamn Krogers and your Walmarts and all that shit for our fucking sustenance. If it doesn't come plaque in fucking non-biodegradable plastic or a cardboard box made out of something fucking, I don't know, fucking recycled, then we don't fucking want it. It's not worth our fucking time anymore. You people, you're dumb as hell and you're all fucking wrong.
Yeah, I mean, instead of hunting and gathering now, we're hunting is a 40-hour work week minimum, plus commute time, to then go gather our food at a store that's not good quality.
You know, still most of the world, especially Europe, looks at the American 40-hour work week as barbaric.
They do.
Most of the world doesn't work. I mean, the professional work week does not last this fucking 40 hours.
Yeah. I mean, just think. If you really started digging in and, like, supplementing your food with some wild edibles that you spend a couple hours gathering...
Look how much further your dollar will stretch.
Look how much further your dollar will stretch. Look how... Possibly even not even working 40 hours anymore. I mean, most... So, the majority of people's money goes for living expenses, rent, or food, which equals almost as much as rent in a lot of cases. If you can severely decrease that amount by wild foraging and growing your own food, then do you really need to keep spending all of that soul-sucking time at a job that you probably don't really love?
No.
So, and, you know, learn the ones around you. Start supplementing them. Like I said, I mean, at least for now, you can make your dollar go further, like Mike said.
And you know what? I'm going to mention some because we're actually a little bit short this week. It looks like we're about at the 52-minute mark. So while I've got a moment here, I want to bring up something we were talking about yesterday, which is not quite the same thing, but in the same vein. You know, we're talking about supplementing your fucking diet. And people, you might get a little bit grossed out, but I am going there and I am dead fucking serious. And by dead, I do mean roadkill. Now, roadkill happens fucking everywhere. Everywhere there's cars, everywhere there's roads, there's going to be roadkill. Now, I'm not talking about going up there scraping some fucking poor animal that's been plastered all over the road up and trying to put that on your goddamn sandwich or in your hamburger helper. That is not what I'm talking about at all. I'm talking about fresh kills. And I've got a couple of tips for this if you are so interested in collecting roadkill. Now, see, the reason I bring this up, our wild edibles... I mean, it's a great list of things that we've got here, especially the last two. But if you haven't noticed, they're all vegetation, okay? These are all plants we were talking about. Plants are great, but you might be thinking, where the fuck's my wild protein? Well, if you haven't got a gun or a hunting license or you live in a big fucking city and you can't get out to the fucking country that much, roadkill might be the fucking way to go on this. What you want to do, you want to go to an area that you know shit dies at a lot, okay?
Now, for the long stretches of roads are good for this.
Exactly. Now, here's my recommendation. For the first few days, now that first day that you go out there, you want to scout your territory. You want to find the place where you know shit's going to get killed, okay? But don't take anything that first day. The reason I say don't take anything that first day, you don't know how long that shit's been sitting there. So, now that you've got a good layout, take a little notepad, mark where you found stuff, okay? Now, when you go back out there that second day, and I do mean like the very next day or whenever, now anything you see there, you know it hasn't been there for the longest it's been there is maybe 24 hours. Most likely it hadn't been there that long at all. Now, you don't want to get anything that's been smushed. You don't want to get anything that looks swollen. You don't want to get anything covered in maggots.
No, nothing that, if it smells terribly bad to you,
yeah,
probably is.
No, I mean, you're looking for the stuff that basically got hit by a car and then bounced off the side of the road with no further damage.
Died recently.
Exactly.
I want to preface this real quick by saying, make sure you check your local laws. We're not advocating you break laws. Or if you do, don't get caught by them. I know here in the state of Tennessee, it is legal to collect roadkill.
You're basically doing a public service at this fucking point.
You really are. I mean,
but you will find, I mean, you're going to find a lot of good meat. I mean, think about the things that usually get hit. I mean, people eat raccoons, people eat possum, people eat squirrels. Yes, I know all these people are hillbillies, but whatever.
I've seen deer dead multiple times.
Deer. I mean, you know what a deer is? A skinny, fast cow, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, and birds. All sorts of fucking birds and shit.
And they're all edible.
Oh,
however,
yeah.
Not everything that gets hit is edible.
I would stare clear of armadillos.
Don't even remotely think about it.
No, I mean, technically,
they carry leprosy that can be transmitted to humans.
Not every armadillo will have leprosy, but if you can tell me the difference between a leporatic fucking armadillo and a non-leporatic armadillo at a glance, then you, mister, you're a better man than I.
The only armadillos I know that are safe to eat are raised for eating.
Farmed armadillos. Do they actually have those?
They do.
They do have farmed armadillos.
Yeah.
How about that?
But I still don't trust them.
No, absolutely not. So, yeah, there's how you get some protein in there.
I'd also be weary of carrion creatures.
Like
not so much because they can carry diseases, but a lot of times scavengers and carrion creatures, coyote, from what I hear, tastes horrible
because
they eat shit.
Vultures, buzzards, things like that. Not the tastiest things ever. And keep something in mind. They could eat a leporatic armadillo with no ill effects to them whatsoever.
Yeah. But like squirrels, I've seen dead squirrels all the time.
I'd be hesitant
to eat like a dog or a cat unless it's a shithead's fan. Shithead's fan, you know, not my own animals. Except for the asshole Nimbus, maybe. Not really, but
Nimbus, you're on the menu.
Yeah. Not really, but near non-imposed shit time. I don't even know about the legality of eating animals deemed as pets.
It's different. I mean,
if we
were in Asia, this would not be an issue.
No.
Well, actually, in some parts of Asia, it's still considered, like, gross. But, I mean, hell, in certain parts of Asia, they literally have farm dogs.
They do.
They farm a specific breed of dog.
And if they offered me a burger from those farm dogs, I'd eat it without blinking.
I mean, neither would, you know, Jeremy Clarkson, you gotta give him credit. He'll eat fucking anything. Meanwhile, Richard Hammond, if he has run out of his fucking crisps or candy bars or whatever
beans,
the hell he brought with
can
him.
Of beans.
Oh god, his fuck, oh yeah, the beans especially. He's fucked.
Tins of beans. Tins.
Yeah. I love that one episode. It's like, fish? No, he doesn't like fish. What about the, no, no. Here's something he might eat. an organic farm egg.
Yeah. Oh, that's so unadventurous. I don't like that.
And I guess, you know, on that terrible disappointment, would you say?
I would say it's time to wrap this up.
So for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James Sigwin Burnett.
And remember, the world is out there, fresh and lush and green. Eat that motherfucker.
DIY to eat your lawn, use guys.
Use guys!